Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We have all heard the term human trafficking, but what does that mean? What are the various forms of human trafficking? And what is the Church doing to help victims of human trafficking? Dr. Hilary Chester is the Associate Director of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Anti-Trafficking Program. Welcome to Catholic Baltimore.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
A lot of us hear the term human trafficking, but what exactly is human trafficking?
Sure, that's a great question, and I think one of the things that we who work in this field have recognized is that the term human trafficking can be a little bit misleading, and it can sort of narrow what we understand human trafficking to be. But in broad terms, human trafficking really is, it's like a modern form of slavery. It's the exploitation by one individual or groups of individuals of other individuals and people for some kind of financial gain. And so there's international conventions, and then we have a federal law here in the U.S., and then there are many states that also have laws that codify and define the crime of human trafficking. And they have three key elements, which is that someone intentionally gets control over another person. So someone, they defraud them, they make them false promises, maybe it's something romantic like I'll be your boyfriend, maybe it's for a legitimate job. Once they've kind of gotten control over that person, they then maintain control over the person through threats of violence, actual violence, threats against the people's families, maybe threats that they'll be arrested for maybe their immigration status or some crime they might be committing as part of the exploitation. So then once they've maintained and are maintaining control over the person, then there is that element of exploitation where people are put to work, whether that's out on the streets or through internet brothels and prostitution, or whether that's in a labor industry, maybe they're forced to work in a restaurant or a meat or vegetable packing plant. There's a lot of industries where this comes up. But it's then that ongoing exploitation of the individual. And so it really is, it's a crime of greed. It's a crime where people are really broken down. And so there's a real, kind of a human element to the abuse that people suffer. And that's what keeps people in these exploitative situations. So it's that deliberate act of getting control over someone and then really financially benefiting by that control. Mm-hmm. The term trafficking it makes it seem as though there needs to be some kind of, movement of people. And traditionally or originally, I would say, our understanding of human trafficking was in kind of a more of an international context, that people were falsely recruited or lured into these situations where then they were brought maybe to the U.S. from another country where they were maybe living in poverty, and so they came here thinking they were going to have legitimate work, and then they were put in situations of exploitation. And so that's, I think, why the term trafficking, makes us think that people are being brought from one place to another. And while that does certainly happen, a lot of trafficking happens at the local level, where it's people here in the U.S. are exploited by other people here in the U.S., whether they're immigrants or U.S. citizens. So it doesn't have to have that movement. It doesn't have to be international, but that's kind of, where our understanding came from and why the term has that trafficking in it, I think.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned prostitution and restaurant working. What are some of the other common forms of human trafficking? And who are the victims? Are they mostly young? Are they mostly female? Or is it all over the place?
It really is all over the place. But there certainly are there are a lot of women, especially young women, young men as well, though, who get exploited into some of the commercial sex industry. And so whether that's working in what looks maybe on the front to be a massage parlor, but, you know, more sexual acts are taking place, you know, in the background, whether it's people working in nightclubs or strip clubs, where there may be a brothel, more of a prostitution element as well. So that's very common. It's also common, though, for people to be exploited in small businesses, so in restaurants, sometimes in retail settings, sometimes I mentioned in agricultural processing. So sometimes it's people out in the fields, but more often we're seeing cases where there are these third-party recruiters who will hire the workforce for a meat packing or a seafood packing or, you know, crab picking, shrimp picking kind of sheds. And so people are then working there, and maybe they owe a huge smuggling debt, and so they're trying to work that off, but they can never get ahead. We also see a lot of cases where people are working in other people's homes, where they're doing the domestic service work, you know, where they're caring for people's children, doing all the housework. We've heard of cases, certainly, where people are recruited and then working in things like nursing homes and daycare centers even. And so while it's a very kind of hidden crime when people are in other people's homes or if they're in that kind of underworld of the sex industry, it can also be really happening in plain sight. You know, the busboys in the back of a kitchen or the cooks in the back of a kitchen, you know, folks working in, even in 7-Eleven, there was a big case in Long Island where some people were being forced to work in 7-Elevens, and they were being kind of coerced under the debt bondage from their smuggling debt.
Well, how big of a problem is this, Hillary?
Well, it's a big problem in that it's very it's so damaging. It's so it's such a heinous crime that to say that, you know, even if it only happens a few times, it really is so damaging to the victims that I would say it's a really big problem. But it also is very extensive, and I think that some of the very extreme cases where people are being held in other people's homes for, you know, years at a time working as domestic servants, those cases may not be very prevalent. They may not be happening everywhere. But that kind of gray exploitation that happens where people are being forced to work and pay off a smuggling debt, for example, and they just can kind of never get out from under it. People who are being exploited in other work situations, like with the labor recruiters I mentioned, where they're working in the meat packing or seafood packing industries, where they just kind of can't get out of that situation, but they're not locked away under lock and key. I think that kind of exploitation is actually a lot more prevalent than we realize.
Mm-hmm. Hillary, why is this an important issue for the USCCB and the Catholic community here in the United States?
So that's also a great question, and I really enjoy kind of explaining, you know, why human trafficking does matter to the Catholic Church, why it should matter to Catholics. It's been really wonderful for us in this field to have Pope Francis speak so frequently about the issue and be so passionate about it. But it really is because it, again, it's such a heinous crime, and it touches on so many areas of, you know, Catholic teaching that are important to us. And so it is fundamentally an issue of human dignity, and the way trafficking works, the way people can control other people is by breaking them down. It really is by convincing the trafficking victim that they're not worth being rescued or being saved or getting out of the situation. And so it really does destroy people. It impacts people's family relationships. If people have huge debt and they were taken advantage of, it can really damage their relationships with their families, where they feel like they're really letting them down. People who are being exploited in the sex industry, that's certainly an affront to what we understand to be healthy sexuality and how sex, you know, is part of, you know, a wholesome relationship for bringing about children and a family. And then, you know, the commercialization of that is, you know, as antithetical as you can get, really, to what is healthy sexuality. There's certainly the greed, taking advantage of other people in a work setting, you know, goes against what we understand to be the dignity of work, the importance of work, and fairness and being, you know, an ethical employer. So it really just touches on a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And it does impact poor people who are looking for opportunities, who are looking for better employment. And so, you know, as a church that's concerned about the poor and making sure that they're not taken advantage of, again, these are issues that should be important to all Catholics.
So how is the church helping to end human trafficking, and how are we helping victims of human trafficking?
So the church has been engaged in this work for a very long time. You know, the women religious have been educating and serving victims all over the world, quite frankly, for many, many years. Many bishops' conferences like ours here in the U.S. have done a lot of advocacy to bring about good laws that protect victims, that make the punishments for trafficking, the consequences more significant, to make sure there are services available by governments to support victims and help them move into their survivor and ultimately restoration of victims.
Hillary Chester is the Associate Director of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Anti-Trafficking Program. It was fascinating talking to you, and thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity.
For more on human trafficking and what you can do to help, go to usccb.org/stopslavery. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. 50 years after St. Lawrence Martyr Parish in Jessup first considered building a bigger church, work in that direction has finally begun. Parishioners, clergy, and staff joined Archbishop William E. Laurie for a June 18th groundbreaking on the first of three phases of a new parish complex located at the site of what used to be Blobs Park, a former German dance hall. The new campus is on the southeast corner of the intersection of Baltimore-Washington Parkway and State Route 175. St. Lawrence's existing 120-seat church, completed in 1868, is on the southwest corner of that cloverleaf, where the expansion of the state route will soon cut off access. The surrounding road construction is in response to rapid growth in the area, highlighting the necessity of a new church in a different location. To learn more, visit CatholicReview.org. Blessed Teresa of Kolkata is everywhere in Albania. The international airport outside the capital is named for her, as is the city's main hospital and second largest public square. Sculptures of the famous nun stand at intersections and peer down from churches across the nation of 3 million people. Her photos are taped to storefronts and hotel entrances and can even be spotted inside the windshields of taxis and private cars. October 19th, the day she was beatified in 2003, is a public holiday. She has made so many benefits for all the world, said Anila Kika, a government economist. Mother Teresa, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979 and will become a saint September 4th, was loved in Albania for her years of charitable work in some of the poorest parts of India and around the world, Kika told Catholic News Service. Read more at CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have the Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Do you have a son, daughter, grandson, or granddaughter who is raised Catholic but no longer practices their faith? If so, you're not alone. It's a big problem that causes Catholic parents and grandparents many sleepless nights. Well, Brandon Vaught, author, speaker, and content manager for Bishop Robert Barron's Word on Fire Ministries, has addressed this problem in his new book, Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. Brandon, welcome to Catholic Baltimore.
Hey, Bob. Thanks so much for having me.
Congratulations on a super book. This book is designed for parents whose children have left the church. Exactly, Brandon, how big of a problem is young people leaving the church today?
Well, I describe it as an epidemic. I think it's an enormous problem. And if you go to any parish and talk to the pastor, they'll tell you that this is, if not the top problem, and certainly one of the largest problems in the church. So many parents and grandparents come to their priests or their church leaders and explain how devastated they are that their child has drifted away from the faith. And the statistics bear this out. The latest Pew Research data shows that about 50% of young Catholics who were raised in the church no longer identify as Catholic today. And about 78% of people who leave the church leave before age 23. Mm. So we're hemorrhaging especially young people from the church, and we got to do something about it.
So why are they leaving?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? G.K. Chesterton once said that the church is like a house with 1,000 gates, and no two people enter at the same exact place. And I think you could turn that around and say that no two people leave for the exact same reasons. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of commonalities. Surprisingly, the surveys show that most people drift away from the church slowly, so over time, and unintentionally. So there wasn't one moment that sort of sent them packing from the Catholic Church. They kind of just stopped going to Mass every week, and then it was every month, and then they just kind of realized, I don't think I'm really connected to the church anymore. And so when the surveyor asks, what religion are you, they no longer identify as Catholic. So that's good news and bad news. It's bad news because it's sad to see so many people drift away for no good reason, but it's good news because it typically means that there aren't huge stumbling blocks we have to overcome to draw them back to the church.
Don't many young Catholics return to the church once they get married and have children, though? Isn't that usually what happens?
Well, that's a common belief, but all of the data we have suggests that if that ever was the case, and there's controversy about whether that statistically was true in the past, it's almost certainly not true now. And there are several reasons why. One is that people are waiting longer and longer to get married, and then even after they're married, to have children. And in many cases, young people who get married decide not to have any children. And so we can no longer count on marriage and baptism as magnets to automatically draw people back. Now, they can be pivotal moments when a young person returns to the church for one of those sacraments. We should take advantage of that opportunity to try to evangelize them and win them back. But what I counsel in my return book is that we can't rely exclusively on those moments. We can't just assume that they'll come back whenever they get married or have kids. We have to be proactive in our evangelization.
So, what can parents do? I mean, we try to be good examples, and then they go to college, and then all of a sudden they're not interested in their religion anymore.
In my latest book, Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church, I very quickly encourage parents to not dwell on the past. So don't think about, I brought them to Mass, I sent them to Catholic schools, yeah, I encouraged all these great religious experiences, but it didn't work, so what happened?
Yeah.
Well, don't worry about the past. You know, we can't change that. Don't have regrets. Don't dwell on the should-haves and could-haves. Instead, we need to focus on what you can do now to draw them back to the church. And so in the book, I lay out what I call the complete game plan. So this involves 7 different steps. And it starts with things that we would all assume are bedrock practices, things like prayer, fasting, and sacrifice. You got to do these. You must be praying for your child every day. Pray that their heart becomes stirred and open to God. Pray for yourself that you'll have the right words to say at the right times when dialoguing with your children. And then fast and sacrifice for your child. Make small sacrifices for the sake of your child. We believe as Catholics that we can offer up our own sufferings for the sake of other people. So take advantage of this. Offer up fasting and sacrifices for your child. And then from there, I encourage parents to equip themselves. So you need to become knowledgeable in your own faith so that if your child has questions or doubts about the Catholic Church, that you're prepared to answer them. I encourage parents to plant the seeds of faith and trust. So even before you have conversations about why they left the church, your child needs to know that you love them unconditionally and that you want what's best for them. And you're convinced that what's best for them is to return to the church, but they need to become convinced themselves that you genuinely care about them as human beings and want what's best in their life. And then I offer several tips and strategies for opening up conversations about faith with your child. Even if your child is completely ambivalent about God or has had bad experiences with the church in the past, I show you simple tips and tricks that I've used in the past to start conversations about faith and move it forward so that you can begin discussing some of the contentious reasons keeping your child away from the church. And then finally, I teach parents how to invite their children to parish events, to other opportunities to evangelize them, and then to close the loop. How do you take the final steps to get a child who's interested in returning to formally reconciling with the church? So it's a long process. I think in most cases it can take months or sometimes even years, but there is a proven path to helping young people return back to the church.
My guest today is Brandon Vaught. His book is titled Return: How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church. It's a great book. It's an easy read. And Brandon has just shared with us some of the many things that his book tells us that parents should do. Brandon, what shouldn't parents do?
Well, that's great. I have a whole section in my book about things that parents shouldn't do. And I'll just mention a couple of them here. One of them is that if your child is a grown child, so I'm thinking here in the 20s, 30s, maybe even 40s, one thing you shouldn't do at first is try to push your child to go to Mass. I talk to a lot of parents who think, if I can just get my child to show up at Mass, then that'll be fine. Then I will have brought him back to church. But the problem with that is that just appearing at Mass doesn't necessarily mean that your child has a relationship with God or is at all connected to the church or her sacrament. So what needs to happen first is for that person to be evangelized. They need to encounter the Lord Jesus, and they need to believe that the Catholic Church is the church that he established. Only then will they want to attend Mass. So Mass is oftentimes the last piece of the puzzle, not the first thing you want to press to your child to attend. Now, I have the caveat that if your child is living under your roof, especially if they're a teenager or maybe even a college student, then I think it's perfectly fine to set as one of the ground rules that they'll join you for Mass each Sunday. So I'm not suggesting this for small children, but for older children, for adult children, don't force them to go to Mass as your first move. Check out some of these other strategies first. The second thing I'll say is not to chide your child. So don't distress and critique over your child's personal and moral decisions. You know, chances are if they've drifted away from the church, they're living in a way that you don't completely agree with. They're making bad moral decisions, maybe some that are even having horrendous effects on their lives. At some point, you can address those, but you don't want to lead with moral critique, because if you do, your child will just tune you out. So that's why in the Return book, I help parents to lead with things like beauty and truth and goodness, lead with things like Pope Francis, the example that he set for our church, lead with the person of Jesus, help them to become infatuated and intrigued by the person of Jesus. Once they encounter Jesus through the church, then the moral issues tend to fall into place. But if you try to reverse that order, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Mm. So, Brandon, what has been the reaction to the book? What have your readers been telling you?
It's been great. Yeah, I've heard from many different readers. I think we've either sold or given away about 10,000 copies. So there's thousands of parents who are using this book to draw their children back. For the most part, I've talked to many parents who are kind of in these early stages where they've told me, you know, before I read your book, the lines of communication were completely closed off with my child. I couldn't even bring up the word God or church without them just flipping out. And they've told me that through some of these tips and strategies, I've been able to open up discussions about these things and try to figure out why they drifted away from the church. And so that's great, because diagnosing the problem is the first step toward the solution. So first figuring out why a child drifted away from the church is the best thing you can do if you want to draw them back. So I've heard a lot of parents who have kind of mastered these early stages and are moving their way through the game plan.
Brandon Vaught, thanks so much for being with us today. It's always great speaking with you.
Thanks, Bob. It's great talking with you.
You can get your free copy of Return, How to Draw Your Child Back to the Church at www.freereturnbook.com. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.